Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Final quarter of the season is finally here. It is on to Denver. Well, not right now. We probably won't get too deep into the Denver Broncos. I'll just be honest with you. Landry Locker, John Lopez, Figgy Fig with you. Sports Radio 610. I don't want to say I'm falling into a trap, John Lopez, but I might be falling into a trap, John Lopez. I've seen the Texans lose
to teams
they shouldn't lose to. I've seen them lose games that they should not lose. But coming off this Patriots win, I'm not ready to say the Texans are elite, but I think I'm almost ready to just say I'm ready to look past Denver. Stop me or join me right now. Right now on the spot, just either hop in this overlook Denver truck or talk me out of this.
Well, I got a third option, okay? I'm not going to hop in on the overlook Denver, and I'm not going to say it's a trap game. I'm going to say this, and that is we're going to find out just how far the Texans have come with this game.
What?
Because here's the deal. How many times over the years have the Texans had a decent win? I think the two best wins in Bill O'Brien's career as a Houston Texans head coach have been this season. And in fact, lo and behold, after I said that yesterday, I open up the I click on a Chronicle link, and John McClain basically ranked the best wins in Bill O'Brien's history and put those two at the top of the list. But how many times have the Texans had a good win over a good team, and then they come back and lose the next one that they should win, and everybody's saying, oh, that's so Texans, typical Texans, you know, they can't stand success. So that's what I'm saying about the Broncos game. You'll know just how good and how consistent and how much better the Texans are now than they've been in O'Brien's tenure here by the fact that they should just win this game painting by numbers. Just boom, 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 boom. Just win it, dispatch the Broncos. If they do that, I think that's as much, that's a similar statement to any game that they've won against playoff teams. Because, you know, how many times have they fallen flat in the past after a good win?
I think you should be able to win this game and then just sip tea. I mean, honestly, they should be sipping tea like Kermit all Sunday. I mean, this is something I'm not asking for much. I mean, it's the Denver Broncos with the guy making his second start. They're their third quarterback. They're on their third quarterback. You're coming off a win over the Patriots. I mean, there's no excuse not to go out there and take care of business. And if you look around the league, it's going to be, if you do, assuming that they do what I think that they're going to do and what you think they're going to do, they're going to be able to sit back and watch a lot of things shape up for them as they head into the final three games of the season. I mean, you have the Ravens at Buffalo. I mean, I know the Ravens right now are the best team in the AFC, but the reality is the Baltimore Ravens have two losses right now. So one of those teams is going to lose. Buffalo, they only have the three losses. So you're gonna gain some ground or gain more of a security net there. That's a win-win situation. If Baltimore loses, it could get extremely interesting down the stretch. Tennessee goes to Oakland. Mm-hmm. So Oakland right now, they're a desperate football team. The Titans are a 2.5-point favorite. You know the Texans got two games with them. So even if Tennessee loses this game, you're still in control against Tennessee, and Tennessee will still be in control against you because they can still win those final two games against you. But they could eliminate Oakland, which means that eliminates a team from the playoff picture to where the Texans have that wild card safety net. Chiefs at Patriots. This is the one that's extremely interesting because the New England Patriots, with how they look right now, two of their final four games are against very good football teams, the Buffalo Bills and the Kansas City Chiefs.
Yeah.
If they lose this game to the Kansas City Chiefs, which they very well could, then you're one game behind them in the win-loss column, and you have the tiebreaker over them. Mm-hmm. So that would be a good situation for you. The Colts, they're fighting for their lives. They got Tampa Bay, and then you have the Steelers against Arizona. Those could both be close games. The point I'm trying to make is
regardless of what happens to the Houston Texans or what happens around the league, the Texans are going to benefit significantly from this win. I mean, they could all but wrap up a playoff spot with this win. Now, would they wrap up the division? No, because you got the two games with Tennessee. But you would all but wrap up a playoff spot with a win over a Denver Broncos team who you're already about a 10-point favorite over on Sunday.
And that's all accurate, but what I'm saying is do something that the Texans have been prone to not do, and that's after a big win, win the games you're supposed to win. And I think that would show just as much of how far the Texans have come than anything. Absolutely. Texans, okay? They beat the Chargers on the road. What do they do the next week against the Panthers?
Wet the bed.
They wet the bed. The Texans beat the Chiefs on the road. What do they do the next week in Indianapolis?
Lost in Indy.
All right. The Texans they actually backed up the Ravens.
Go
ahead.
The Jags win. The impressive Jags win with just an embarrassing
in
2-week
London,
layoff
where
loss.
They looked click. You know, they were clicking, and the Jaguars were still on the hunt. What did they do the next week? They lost to the Ravens, which is not a team that should have won. That's why I left that one out. But it's an arguable thing.
I mean, they shouldn't have looked like that.
Right. So here's the thing, Landry. Every year, I'm talking to all those Texans fans. You can go back to 2002, but I'm talking more specifically about the Bill O'Brien era. You win a big game. You come back the next week against a team you should win, you should beat. You lose. I think the Texans this week absolutely should beat the Broncos. But it's absolutely the kind of game that they have lost in the past. And if they can back up a big emotional turn the page, as Bill O'Brien says, win against the Patriots with a paint-by-numbers win against the Broncos. In other words, take control early. Just do your business. You know, just dispatch them, you know, methodically. Then I think that says a lot about how far the Texans have come. That's what good teams do.
Really, John?
Well, look at the record.
How thirsty are you right now?
No, look at the record. I just laid it out.
So you're telling me if we come in here on Monday, you're going to start the show with if they beat the Broncos, say, man, this team's come a long way.
They did what they were supposed to do. How many times have they done that this year? Much less in the Bill O'Brien era. I just gave you the game.
I get what you're saying, but you're telling me you're going to come in here if they beat the Broncos with Drew effing Lockett quarterback.
Yeah.
You're going to come in here and say, this is a new ball club.
No, I'm not going to say it's a new ball club. I'm saying that it's evidence of how far they've come as a good team.
Man.
They lost to Kyle Allen after beating Phillip Rivers.
Phillip's been losing a lot of games. I don't know if you've seen it.
They lost to Jacoby Brissett after beating Patrick Mahomes. They just beat the greatest ever. Now they're playing Drew Locke. I think it says something. I'm not saying it's going to be a new team, but I think it says something about how far they've come when they do it methodically. They do what they're supposed to do. I really do believe that.
I think that a football season is just about, you know, the fluid process of managing expectations. And my expectations, just like in most seasons, and that's why the NFL is so good. Mm-hmm. And anyone who gets on a microphone and says, well, you just got to let it play out. It's a week-to-week league. Go coach or something. Okay.
Yeah.
Like, go coach. That's not what makes this league good. That's not why fans care. The reaction and the fluid process and the unpredictability of the league is what happens. So if you say that, you should not even be allowed to talk into a microphone. You sound like a jackass, quite honestly. I didn't mean to get on my tangent there, but
it's all right.
But to each his own. But I've gone from having expectations as soon as Andrew Luck retired that this team's going to win the division to watching Deshaun Watson at certain times heading into the Baltimore game, thinking that maybe this could be an elite team, to now not thinking it's an elite team, but thinking they're better than the New England Patriots. So they're somewhere in that second tier, maybe right above the third tier of the AFC. I've never fallen to the point, even after the Carolina loss, where I could entertain the possibility of this team in this situation needing a win this bad, losing to a team like the Denver Broncos. And you know what? I know that I've probably said something like this before, which adds to your point, J-Lo.
Right.
But I just haven't gotten to that point to where, A, I'm going to make much of it if they do beat the Denver Broncos, and B, I'm going to expect them to do anything other than beat the Denver Broncos.
I expected them to beat the Carolina Panthers.
I did too.
I expected them to beat the Colts.
I kind of did.
Yeah. And I expect them to beat the Broncos. I think it says a lot if they can just go move on. I always call it paint by numbers because it's just very simple. You don't have to be creative. Just do it. Just fill in the blanks and get it done. And you can go back year after year after year. I mean, I don't have their 2016 or 15 record in front of me, but I guarantee you most of our listeners understand what I'm talking about. You win a relatively big game, and the next week, there you go, done. You lost another one.
You have to do a fart sound.
Well, that's
really
kind of necessary. What it's been.
You
win a big game, and next week, you go like that.
Yeah, I don't know about that. COG John Lopez making fart sounds on a Tuesday.
That's gold radio right there.
Landry Locker, Figgy Fig with you. Sports Radio 610. We're trying to go on to Denver. Mm-hmm. I'm actually looking past Denver, but we're trying to go on to Denver. However, you're going to get a chance at the end of this segment to relive the game against the New England Patriots. It is Stern Talk. It's a must attend event. It's going to be in our Verizon Artist Lounge. It's going to be here at 59 and Westland. Free food, free drinks. Clint Sterner is going to break down all of the tape. You can win your VIP tickets by going to sportsradio610.com/live and register to win. Or you're going to get a chance here in the next few minutes to attend. I'm telling you, it's pretty good. They set it up last time with the food.
Mm-hmm.
I'm on that keto now, so I can't. Since Monday.
How come this is the first I've heard of this?
Since Monday. I'm eating cheese. I ate some peppers. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep. I'm on it.
So you feeling it?
No.
It's only Tuesday.
Yeah.
That's good. That's big news.
Trying. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Trying. So I can't get on that. But that pasta. Mm-hmm. I know Figgy damn sure ain't on no keto, so he'll be here. He'll be in that pasta. I know J Lo ain't on no keto either.
No,
so I don't know, and I don't know if the OG's gonna be at this one, but there will be a lot of stuff going on. It will be the Stern Talk to relive the Patriots game. I'm sure they'll get into that trick play and everything as well. Stern Talk, one of the good things that we do at this station, courtesy of my man Hot Fudge, who takes over at 2 o'clock. Mm-hmm. I didn't want to do this. I was trying not to do this. It's just become a tradition. I understand that it's whiny. I understand that it gets repetitive.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I just have to do it.
What's that?
Booger McFarland can't get out of his own damn way.
Dude.
Every Tuesday when I come in here, he has said something so stupid that it requires my attention. This is Booger McFarland yesterday. Seattle Seahawks beat the Minnesota Vikings, but there was a play early in the game where the ball was batted out of Russell Wilson's hand. And Russell Wilson slapped it forward, mm-hmm. and Minnesota caught it.
Mm-hmm.
Here's Booger McFarland's in-depth analysis after this play.
It is a bat, but it's a legal bat because he bats it backward towards his own end line. And then, of course, his teammate recovers it and runs for a score.
Well, these are the type of plays that historically have gone against the Vikings. The Minneapolis Miracle.
What?
Plays that are fluke plays that went against this team. I'm sure Vikings fans are saying it's about time we get one of these plays to go our way.
Yeah, in case you didn't know, the Minneapolis Miracle went in the favor of the Minnesota Vikings. Stephon Diggs caught the pass against the New Orleans Saints, took it to the end zone. So nice try there, Boog, but once again, you fail. Once again, you stink. Once again, you have completely ruined the most prominent broadcast in the history of sports every time you open your pie hole. Sorry.
The Minneapolis Miracle, how do you forget that?
I mean, the one play that went against the Vikings that I can think of was in the 90s.
Well, the Hail Mary in the 70s.
The Hail Mary, Drew Pearson from Roger Staubach, mm-hmm. and the Gary Anderson missing his first field goal of the year against the Dirty Birds in mm-hmm. the NFC Championship game.
Yeah, those are them.
Yeah. Not the Minneapolis Miracle.
Mm-hmm.
That was a miracle in Minneapolis.
I kind of feel bad for him on this one. I mean,
but you know, like when you have a bad take, and God knows I've probably had about six since the mm-hmm. show started 12 minutes ago. But you know, like when you have a bad take, but you just keep digging.
I'm not familiar with what you're saying. I'm not familiar with that.
It's hard to watch.
Mm-hmm.
I want to give him a compliment, but I can't. It's mm-hmm. just not. It's a bad broadcast.
Well, you've been talking about it all year. We've been talking about it all
it's
year.
It's such a bad broadcast.
But that one's hard to ignore.
And that ref, too. I don't know. Like, you're supposed to introduce. I know Joe Testator, your guy, Double Guns.
Mm-hmm.
You're supposed to introduce the guy on the air at least. Like, at least like Joe Buck and Troy Aikman will be like, Mike Pereira, come on down.
Mm-hmm.
It's like this Rolls guy's just got a hot mic.
Like the third person.
He's just got a hot mic out of nowhere.
He does.
There'll be like a fumble, and all of a sudden this Jamoke will just come on and go, yeah, well, it looked like he, and it's like, what? What are you doing, man?
Yep.
What are you doing, Booger?
That's what Jalen Ramsey said.
Booger. What are we doing here? Like, what's going on? By the way, we're gonna have a little showdown today that I'm kind of looking forward to.
Really?
I asked you if we should do this. I mean, we ran promos on the station saying it,
mm-hmm.
so I think it's only fair if we have this showdown. The OG,
McLean. The OOG?
The OG-er.
Yeah.
Is going to come in.
Mm-hmm.
He's been saying the Texans are going to hire Nick Caserio.
Yeah.
Ian Rappaport put out a story that said they're not.
That's true.
I'm looking forward to the
happens.
Showdown.
Let's see
what's
going to
happen.
Yeah.
Give me a prediction. What's going to happen, Figgy? What's going to happen? What's he going to, what do you think?
Well, there are two options. He's going to say Ian Rappaport doesn't know what he's talking about. He doesn't have the right sources. Or he's going to say he's going to agree because he's probably picked up some more newer information.
It's a fluid process.
Yeah.
It's a fluid process. So we'll see. It would be a lot of new information because I believe we ran the promo for 3 days last week.
Mm-hmm.
And that was 5 days ago.
Yeah.
So I can't imagine. We'll see what you got to say. We love you very much. We haven't talked to you since Friday. And I miss you very much. Hopefully you're not as depressed as you were for pigging out on Thanksgiving. The OG John Lopez, Landry Locker, Figgy Fig with you. 713-572-4610 if you want to get in. Are we making fools of ourselves overlooking the Denver Broncos? Am I making a major mistake? Let me know, Loophole. 713-572-4610. Brock Osweiler Volume 2. Yes, it is happening. And there's a move that needs to be made in the AFC South that would make things as dramatic as possible for Bill O'Brien. I'll tell you what it is next. Brock Osweiler is probably the worst signing the Houston Texans have ever made, right? I mean, it's pretty obvious. You punted on it after 1 year. You gave up a second-round pick because you were so desperate to get rid of him. It's safe to say that he's probably the worst signing that's been made around these parts.
100%.
Brock Osweiler Volume 2 is going on in front of our very eyes. And let me just give you the similarities real quick. Nick Foles won a Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
Won a Super Bowl, was a part of a Super Bowl team in Philadelphia. Despite starting the season as the backup, came in and contributed to a Super Bowl team. Brock Osweiler, same thing in Denver. I know Peyton Manning ended the season, but Brock Osweiler had a hand in that.
He did more during the regular season.
He had a hand
still,
in it.
Yeah.
And the Texans decided to pay him handsomely. They brought him in. It was a disaster. Same thing's happening right now with Nick Foles. This is what it sounded like in the stands in Jacksonville as Nick Foles was on the field on Sunday before being benched for a rookie sixth-round pick. Here are the chants going through the stands in Jacksonville.
Minshew! 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 Minshew!
You know what they're saying.
They're saying Minshew. Mm-hmm. They wanted Gardner Minshew in the game. They are in a situation right now where they need to do exactly what the Texans did. They need to get rid of Nick Foles. They need to punt on him like the Texans did for Brock Osweiler and move on. Do whatever it takes. Mm-hmm. Right now, it's a similar situation because next year they're going to have $33 million in dead money if they just flat out cut Nick Foles. So that's going to be very hard for them. A trade would still give you some dead money, just like it did with the Texans when they traded Osweiler. But you got to find a way to get rid of it. Which brings me to this. Who is the man who made this move for Brock Osweiler? Got Brock Osweiler out of town and traded him to the Cleveland Browns and sent a second round pick their way. Who was that guy?
That was one Rick Smith.
What is Rick Smith doing right now?
Nothing, I don't think. I think he might be looking for a job now.
He's trying to get back into the NFL.
Yeah.
And if you haven't been paying attention in Jacksonville, things have been a total disaster there. Tom Coughlin has been overseeing things. He's basically been their GM and their president. It's been an absolute disaster. He's pretty much ran Jalen Ramsey out of town. He pretty much was the one that wanted to bring Nick Foles in. It's been a disaster. Here's what Tom Coughlin sounded like when he was talking about all the moves he made. He had a media session, and here's his back and forth with some of the media types in Jacksonville.
Tom, are you planning on returning in 2020? Is that what you'd like to, is that your plan for now?
There's five games to go.
What do you need to see out of Nick Foles in the next five games?
We'd like to win. That's why we play. Our goal is to win.
Sorry. Is there any determination on Doug's status for next year? Is that going
to
be your
goal? Five games to win.
Doug said yesterday that he was criticized internally about his decision to ease up on these guys in training camp. Did you criticize him internally, and how do you react to what he did in the training camp in the preseason?
Hey, that would be between Doug and I, and it's not for anyone else.
Is there still interest in keeping Unique Ngakoue here long term? I know he was offered a contract this past
offseason. We have 5 games to play, and everyone has a lot to prove.
This guy is likely on his way out.
He has to be.
It's very possible that Tom Coughlin is on his way out. So with that said, I think the Jags need to call on the man been in a similar situation. The man who has been in a similar situation there with the quarterback, but was able to work miracles and get rid of him. A man by the name of Rick Smith needs to be hired by the Jacksonville Jaguars. He wants to be back in the NFL. He's been a GM in this league. I know you can say what you want about Rick Smith. He built the core of this Texans team. He's the one who traded up for Deshaun Watson. He's the one who drafted J.J. Watt. He's the one who drafted DeAndre Hopkins. He's made all these moves except the recent ones. And I tell you what, as far as content, from a content perspective, could you imagine, in the words of John McClain, if Bill O'Brien, the GM, had to go toe-to-toe in this division with Rick Smith, the GM, in Jacksonville? I am foaming at the mouth at the thought, John Lopez.
I would love it. I would absolutely love it. Remember when this was the funniest thing of all, when the Texans, when Rick Smith left, they called it a leave of absence.
And they said he was going to come back.
Which would indicate, yeah, that he's going to be back at some point, but of course it didn't take him long to.
I mean, that was always silly. Mm-hmm. That was always silly.
To fix that. I would love it. He has said as recently as last month, November, that he is open to returning to the NFL in 2020. That's next season. He told Jason Lockenfora that last month.
Man, and he'll get you out of this situation. They got two first round picks for Ramsey. So bring in Rick Smith. Let's have Bill O'Brien running the Houston Texans. Rick Smith running the Jacksonville Jaguars. Mm-hmm. You got Mike Vrabel, the former Texans coach out there in Tennessee. And then Indianapolis, you got Frank Reich and all that stuff going on. Let's just bring it, man. Could you imagine what it would be like leading up to the game between Rick Smith and Bill O'Brien? They might actually finally say something about each other, too.
On opposing teams. I don't know, maybe not. But Rick Smith, you know, I mean, he was the general manager when the Texans drafted J.J. Watt and Deshaun Watson.
He traded up for Deshaun.
Yeah, the two greatest players in the history with Arian and Andre. It would be pretty luscious, wouldn't it? It would be pretty sweet to have him back in the division and have them going back at each other. I'm not saying it's off the table.
And you know what? Honestly, and I'm not saying this to be trite or funny.
Yeah.
I think Rick Smith could actually get his foot in the door in Jacksonville. I mean, I don't know that they're going to hire him. But,
well, they're familiar with his work.
Well, there's also the Rooney Rule. He could be a guy that gets an interview because he wants to get back in the NFL.
Well, he's going to interview wherever he wants.
Exactly.
Because of that.
And I'm telling you.
And probably, I don't know, general manager jobs come up even less than coaching jobs.
Right.
When was the last time, you know, someone, because coaches change every year.
I mean, does Rick Smith really around the NFL? I know here we're close to the situation, so we have it. But does, like, around the NFL, do you think people look at Rick Smith and say that guy's an idiot?
No, not at all.
Yeah, I don't think this is like a situation where it's too outlandish to even think that a team might hire Rick Smith to be their GM.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't seem that way to me. The question always comes up, though, when we're talking about Rick Smith, Bill O'Brien, John Lopez, Landry Locker, Figgy Fig, with you on a Tuesday. John McClain's going to be on in 15 minutes. Whose idea was it to sign Brock Osweiler? So I decided to just go digging a little bit because mm-hmm. it seems like there was some finger pointing. He decided. And I just went back to Bill O'Brien's press conference after Brock Osweiler was signed, talking about the evaluation process of why the Texans made the worst move in their franchise history.
We went into a room for a couple days and we watched. We watched a lot of film together. We watched Brock, and we feel there's a lot of things about Brock. I'm not going to get into all the details about what we see, but this guy is a good quarterback. He's got command at the line of scrimmage. He stands in the pocket. He doesn't look at the rush. He's standing in the pocket, and he's delivering the ball down the field. He played well in some big games this past year in Denver, and we're very, very glad to have him as our quarterback.
Very, very glad. Man, what a mess that was.
But Rick Smith saved the day. Well, and Jacksonville needs the day saved.
What better man than Rick Smith? By getting rid of him.
What better man than Rick Smith to come in there and save the
and,
day?
And, you know, he got rid of the money, some of the money. Obviously, yeah. They picked up some of it.
Yeah.
And what'd you say? I think it's $19 million after the June 1st. It will be the dead money. $33 million before that.
They're gonna have to take it on the chin a little bit.
No, they will. But they're in rebuilding mode. I mean, they got a young quarterback. They're going to move forward with Minshew. You know, Fournette is not, you know, ancient. He's just been in the league a few years.
Two first-round picks with Jalen Ramsey trade.
Yeah,
and got
two picks.
He got stocked up. Mm-hmm. It's interesting. Rick Smith to Jacksonville. Doesn't sound too crazy now that I say it.
And the thing is, John McClain famously always says, you know, Bill O'Brien signs off on every deal when he was with Rick Smith and Brian Gain. So, I mean, whether it was...
Well, you called him on that. He said Rick Smith picked the players. Bill O'Brien got to put together a roster.
But he has repeatedly said, McClain, and he's coming in just a couple of minutes, so we can go back over this real quick, but repeatedly said that Bill O'Brien signs off on every decision.
Yeah.
And now Bill O'Brien makes every decision.
Yeah. And hopefully Rick Smith's making the decisions in Jacksonville, because I think it would be a lovely, lovely, lovely possibility. I'm on my Rick Smith versus Bill O'Brien high right now, but I think – the buzz is about to be killed because John McClain's going to come in, and the first thing I'm going to ask him is, will the Jags hire Rick Smith as GM? And I'm going to see if I just get completely slapped by the NFL Hall of Famer. We'll see next. All right, we got John McClain here. He is looking through the Houston Texans cheerleading calendar. Easy there, John.
Nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, easy there. We got a special guest, too. We'll get to in just a sec. Let's just say you got a lot of writing experience in the room, to say the very, very least. And I would say, if you had to power rank yourself, Lopez, against the other two writers in this room, where are you? Where are you at?
Well, I said it honestly on the air the other day, and I don't think John McClain will argue with me. John McClain is a better reporter than me, and I'm a better writer than him. John, would you argue that? Would you argue with that? No?
They can't see you nodding, John.
Of course, I can. You can say I'm nodding.
Now, Dale Robertson can turn a phrase, so I'll say that's at best
okay.
a push.
Okay, so you'll give him a little
something. By the way, Dale Robertson is in the studio now.
He is in the studio.
Happy to have me crash the party this morning.
Yeah.
No problem. No problem. Always a pleasure.
I was short on cash.
Short on cash.
Yeah, you've come to the right place to my right.
Dale is receiving the Ron Stone Media Award for Excellence by the Touchdown Club of Houston at their annual banquet, in which they disclose they're all Houston area players, coach of the year. It's always a sellout. I was there when Dan Pastorini was touchdown of the year at the preseason banquet. It's going to be a lot of fun, and Dale is going to be the highlight.
Now, yes, Dale, you recently retired. I'm always intrigued by when I see people retire, especially when you're fortunate to have the job that you had for as long as you did. Some people just get bored as hell out of their mind, and other people just thrive. I don't feel like there's much middle ground with it. How are you living with it?
Well, I've been in an unusual situation. I've been through a little medical episode. We don't need to get into that.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
But also, you know, this is what we call humble bragging. I've got a house in France.
Yeah.
So I've spent, about
I don't.
about half of the time.
I got a trailer in Sargent.
I got a home in Spring Valley.
You got a bigger boat than I do.
He's got a house in France. I got a trailer in Sargent. And John McClain's got a 30-inch TV at his house.
There you go. Well,
32.
32.
Don't shortchange it.
You know, truthfully, I don't know yet. I'm still figuring it out. And I am still writing the wine column for the Chronicle. And I'm finding that I'm just actually putting a lot more effort into that. Used to be that was an afterthought because, you know, the sports stuff had to be delivered every day. But I'm not bored yet, but I certainly see the potential for some days of boredom.
Do you speak French by now?
Un petit peu.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. That means a little bit, I'm guessing. I'm just using my common sense. Do they like you in France? Have they taken a liking to you? Because all my people that go to France always say that they just hate Americans there sometimes.
Well, John, yeah, I think the OG over here would vouch for this, because we actually covered the 1998 Soccer World Cup.
We spent a month
Cup
together
there.
In France.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
And what you find with the French people is once you're in, you're so in, you never get out.
Mm-hmm.
But their culture is different to the point that you have. It's not that they don't like you. They just aren't. Hey, how you doing? They're not Texans.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, but I have to say, once they are your friends.
The club.
And the people in my valley, I've had this house for 20 years.
Yeah.
I mean, I'll start tearing up if I talk too much about it, but it's just been an unbelievable symbiotic relationship.
That's awesome.
But yeah, I've run into some really crappy French waiters. They were jerks. You can't judge the French based on a bad restaurant experience in Paris.
All right, and so you came by, take a couple pictures. There's another event coming up, and I wanted you to talk about that. And then you dropped a little nugget. He came in dropping
nuggets. Dale Robertson, by the way, with us, with John McClain, if you're just tuning in.
Dale came in dropping nuggets on the interesting connection with this Texans team and the 1979 Oilers. But first things first, you came in. You've got an event coming up that we're going to be you and.
Well, yeah, we're not. They've been a little slow. There's nothing on the website right now. Beautiful little museum out in on Louetta Road in Spring called the Pearl Museum. Mm-hmm. And I've done this event three or four times. I had Dick Vermeil was my guy 1 year. It's called Sports Night.
Mm-hmm.
And this year I thought, let's, the three of us, did a little math, the three of us together have 120 years of journalism experience in Houston.
Right.
Houston.
Yeah.
Okay. And so we're going to get together, we're going to riff on, and it's a great time to be doing it. We've got all the Astros stuff. The Texans, reasonably certain they will not be preparing for a Super Bowl that weekend, but they might have come close.
Some breaking news.
They might have come close. And, of course, you know, with the Rockets and, you know, Harden on another historic tear, a lot to talk about, but we're going to have some fun. It benefits the museum. It's without question the most attractive and well-curated small museum in Harris County. What does it have to do with sports? Absolutely nothing. But the guy's my buddy on the board. He likes sports. Here we are.
So here we are.
Thank you for joining us for that.
Yeah, I'll be doing that for sure.
But just remember, Pearl Museum, January 25th. It is the Saturday night, 8 days before the Super Bowl.
All right.
So there we are.
All right. So we'll be there. And then let's talk about the parallel between this Texans team. You I watched the 78 and 79 Oilers and obviously did the book with Pastorini. Sure. So I know a lot about it. But you were on the beat.
I was a beat guy.
In 1979. What was that you were sharing with me when you came in today?
Well, what struck me is the loose similarities between that Oilers team, which was without question the best Oilers team of its era, and possibly we could talk for an hour, not necessary about the Warren Moon era, but that team, that was the one team that had a viable chance of going to the Super Bowl despite the Steelers.
Right.
Okay.
One of the greatest teams in history.
Right. And the Steelers, of course, were defending Super Bowl champions, would win another that season. But where it got interesting to me is the Oilers won a huge Thanksgiving Day game against the Dallas Cowboys. I mean, at the time, it did feel like the Super Bowl.
Right.
Okay. And it totally position them to do what they need to do, just as the Texans beating the Patriots Sunday night position them to be where they what they need to do. They've got still got a lot of work to do,
right?
But it got them where they point in the right direction,
right?
The Cowboys win did the same thing. A week later, 25 degree weather and snow flurries in Cleveland, they somehow managed to lose to the Browns.
There you go. We were talking about that earlier about the Denver game coming up.
That's the premise of a story that's going to appear in Texas Sports Nation in the next couple of days that I'm writing. You know, again, I'm as a resident OG, I get to do the historical perspective.
There you go. I want to ask your take about this because you're talking.
Anyway,
about
I'm not the, done. Let me finish the scenario.
One more thing.
Here's what happens. So they lose to the Browns, and all of a sudden their destiny's been completely plucked out of their hands again.
Yeah.
But then they turn around the following week and beat the Steelers in the most violently physical greatest game they ever played. And they took a lot of injuries out of that game that ultimately
Monday Night Football.
Oh, unbelievable game. Everybody remembers the Dolphins game the previous year, but no, it was that was the reference standard game of Love You Blue.
Right.
And it put the fear of God in the Steelers. The Steelers said, "Ooh, maybe these guys can play," because early in the year the Steelers, and there's another loose parallel, the Steelers had beaten them 38-7. So that the Baltimore game, Texans. You
know, yeah.
So
41-7.
But why even bring this up right now? Because it's been 40 years since Houston got to celebrate a team in a conference championship game. Okay.
So and the moral is don't lose to Denver.
That's short version.
Had the Oilers not lost to Cleveland, they would have been at home hosting the Steelers for the chance to go to the Super Bowl.
I mean, they would have probably. You know.
Yeah.
If everything, you know, obviously everything changes, but that's the long and short of it. And that was the Renfro, Mike Renfro catch game.
Yeah.
Were they on the cusp of beating the Steelers in Pittsburgh? No, they weren't. But had the game been played here, you know, home field does matter in football, if not baseball.
Dale, I want to ask you. I want to ask you two questions about the Oilers. Do you think, because there's some apathy and some there's a cynic outlook with the Texans. Some of it self created, and some of it you just you know they haven't been around as much. You think if they'd come back as the Oilers, like the Browns did, coming back with as the Browns, the original, you think that maybe there would be less apathy and there would be more connection with the fans in this team?
Honestly, at the outset, perhaps, but I think that's so long ago now, I don't think it makes much difference.
Yeah.
You know, the Texans had an opportunity, you know, somewhere starting about 7 or 8 years ago to have established their own identity and made people who don't even remember the order,
mm-hmm.
orders. It's only because the Texans have failed to actually do anything
right.
that has caused that to linger. But, you know, and as John, the general, will remember, there was – you know, people were really mad at the Oilers when they left, and mm-hmm. You know, yeah, there was a lot of nostalgia, but it was kind of a mixed bag. Personally, I would have liked to have seen it happen.
Just sure,
because I'm a Virgo, I like neat things. I wanted to be continuous.
The Virgo. What are the personality traits of the Virgo?
Well, I always line up my pencils. The erasers are always to the right.
Okay,
you know, stuff like that.
There we go.
Stuff like that.
Also known as OCD.
All right, here you go, baby.
This is the last question I want to ask you. You got to be real honest here. Don't hold back here, because you are a writer. You're a very accomplished writer. You're being honored as such. The book about Dan Pastorini, written by John Lopez. If you had to rank it 1 to 10, just based on pure articulation and everything that goes into writing a book, what would you rank it 1 to 10? I'm giving it like a 6.5.
Oh, come on now.
No, I'm, you know, hey, I'm back in the day, behind Lopez's back, we used to call him Pulitzer John. So I've always been a huge fan of John's writing skills, and that did. I'm delighted you have found another life in radio, my friend. Mm-hmm. But
I thought that internet thing might take off.
No, it was a very well written book, and you know, I've got a long, complicated history with Dan myself. But the bottom line is, we've been great friends for years, and you know, it's an event in my life, and I'm glad that it got chronicled. Mm-hmm. Pardon the pun. But I love Dan to death. He's the toughest SOB I ever covered on either offense or defense.
Yep.
I can only imagine.
That's the only reason we got into this whole thing, is because he was too tough and too stubborn to tell the Oilers, no, stop shooting me up with that crap.
Yeah.
And it was posted, not chronicled.
Yeah, that's right. Back in the day.
Good point. I forgot.
Well, thanks, man. January 25th.
January 25th.
Pearl Museum, Spring, Texas.
On Loretta Road. Beautiful little place. Two ancillary benefits.
And what's the headline? What are we being called here?
You remember the Three Tenors album? We're putting out an album, The Three OGs.
The Three OGs.
catered by Hicks. So first grade food and sporty wine guy himself, being me, will be curating the wine.
There we go.
Oh, well, that's all I had to hear right there. That's all
December 11th, you'll be honored by the Touchdown Club in Houston.
And a final thought there, Ron Stone, who the award is named for, was a great friend and mentor, one of the most amazing, amazing journalists I've ever worked with.
There you are.
Awesome.
Great cemetery.
Congratulations.
Thank you so much, Dale. Dale Robertson, the great Dale Robertson here on In the Loop.
Let me get your wheelchair.
And you know,
settle down.
I'll say this right now, as we transition to our weekly visit with John McClain. Dale's done a lot of impressive things in his life, but making McClain give up some airtime was like probably the most impressive accomplishment that you had.
You silenced John McClain.
I was happy to do it.
You silenced John
McClain.
Because
unlike some people, they don't realize the guests should be doing most of the talking.
Hey,
it's radio. Come on. Thanks, guys.
We don't consider you a guest, John. You're part of the show.
Yeah, you're part of the show. That's the thing. You're not a guest.
That's why
it's your thing. John, I want to get right into this. We still got some time left in this segment. He's gonna walk Dale out. So we'll. You're not walking him out.
Right.
Oh, okay. All right, John. I threw this out there. How likely? I'm not saying this is gonna happen. I'm saying I would love for this to happen. Right now, in Jacksonville, they're dealing with a similar situation that the Texans dealt with.
Rick
with Brock
Smith
Osweiler.
Is general manager.
That's what I said.
I just retweeted it.
Yes.
All right.
No, I'm not saying it's not going to happen.
No, I'm not saying it's going to happen. I'm just saying it would be awesome.
I'd like to see Rick get back in the league. He's been taking care of his three kids. And at some point, I believe he will be back in the league, either as a general manager or working at the league office. I've said that all along, and I still believe it.
Talked about, I guess it was about 8 or 10 days ago, that Rick Smith is looking to get in 2020.
I remember when Nolak and Firma had that Rick Smith was going to be fired, and he resigned 5 years later. That's why he's Nola Confirma. Jason Nola Confirma.
Technically, he wasn't wrong.
Yeah, it's right before the game with Baltimore when Kubiak was the offensive coordinator and they were favored by 20 and the Texans beat him. He had this big scoop the morning of on TV that Rick Smith was out as general manager, and they had already quoted multiple sources as they were looking for his replacement. And I called Bob McNair immediately. Of course, he said it wasn't true, and it wasn't true. Just another example of bad information in the national media.
Do you how pissed does that make you? I mean, because I feel like
that
we can go back.
Pissed. It just ruined my Sunday because you got to react to those stories that aren't usually right on national TV about firings like that.
Has like the new age? Because you've been doing this for a while. You're an NFL Hall of Famer. You've been doing it for since when?
First camp was 77.
77. And you and Dale. Obviously, it's changed a lot.
Dale and I played tennis in 77.
How much more BS is there out there right now, and how much less accountability is there when it comes to NFL?
Like
reports?
There was a thing Sunday, White could come back in the playoffs. Well, if he does, that's the most miraculous comeback in history from a torn pec. Could he? Yeah, I could weigh 180 by the time the playoffs.
Well, you're on that pace. Doubtful. You're on that pace.
And there was another report by Ian Rappaport, the Texans aren't going to hire GM. I totally disagree. I think they're going to hire Caserio. He'll have the title of GM, but Bill O'Brien will still have control of personnel, which I've been saying on this station for months, and Bill would have had control of personnel if Caserio would come when they tried to get him before. And right now it's – based on the trades, it's hard to argue with the setup they have because a lot of those deals they've made have been really good.
They've been really, really good. Just back on the other thing, why would Caserio make a lateral move?
Well, number one, his contract didn't up till May. General manager jobs have long been filled, so he'd have to sit out for a year. Or he can go where he's got good buddies like Jack Easterby and Bill O'Brien and James Lipford. They may have other people in there. I fully expect there'd be a lot of people fired in the offseason as Jack Easterby and Bill O'Brien's right-hand man brings in more people that he used to work with in New England.
But don't he have buddies in New England too?
Who?
Caserio?
Yeah, but he wants out of there.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. That's kind of what I'm saying. Why would he make that letter? Is it just toxic there for him?
He's let his contract expire so he can get out. Yeah. He hadn't signed an extension. Maybe he will if they, like, promised him Belichick type control,
right,
but Belichick's
right.
Given no indication he's ready to step aside.
So you still stand by? We actually had that. We were going to get into that, but the Ian Rappaport report that they're not considering it. You still stand by? You think they do hire Caserio?
I do. He said they're not going to hire general manager, and they're not going to hire general manager as far as a guy who would have control of everything.
Mm-hmm.
That's not going to happen. As long as Bill O'Brien's here, he's going to have control and answer to Cal McNair and of course Janice McNair.
Okay, very interesting. I love it. I love when the general doubles down. John McClain here with us. Thanks to Dale Robertson for joining the show. Two legends, two good writers. It's nice to be joined by a good writer from the Houston Chronicle. Yeah, it is. You know, I'm
a former good writer from the Chronicle.
Someone who didn't bail on the business that made him. Like,
this guy
like,
kept writing. I'm still writing.
In the Loop, Sports Radio 610. Let's get into the Big W. This is John McClain's first appearance here on 610 since Bill O'Brien beat the man that John McClain said last week he calls daddy. He got the W. Let's react to it. Let's look ahead as well to the final quarter of the season. That's next.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.